ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 9, The Passing of Bhishmadev, text number 49. Pitra,
Pitra,
Chanumato,
Chanumato,
Raja,
Raja,
Vasudeva Numoditaha,
Vasudeva Numoditaha,
Chakara,
Chakara,
Rajyam,
Parmena,
Pitri, Paitamaham, Vibhu, Pitra Chanumato Raja, Vasudeva Numodita, Chakara Rajyam Dharmena, Pitri Paitamaham Vibhu. Pitra, by his uncle Dhritarashtra, cha, and Anumataha, with his approval, Raja, King Yudhisthira, Vasudeva Anumoditaha, confirmed by Lord Sri Krishna. Chakara, executed. Rajyam, the kingdom. Dharmena, in compliance with the codes of royal principles. Pitri, father. Paitamaham, forefather. Vibhu, as great as. Translation. After this, the great religious king, Maharaj Yudhisthira, executed the royal power and the kingdom strictly according to the codes and royal principles approved by his uncle and confirmed by Lord Sri Krishna. Maharaj Yudhisthira was not a mere tax collector. He was always conscious of his duty as a king, which is no less than that of a father or spiritual master. The king is to see to the welfare of the citizens from all angles of social, political, economic, and spiritual upliftment. The king must know that human life is meant for liberating the encaged soul from the bondage of material conditions. And therefore, his duty is to see that the citizens are properly looked after to attain this highest stage of perfection. Maharaj Yudhisthira followed these principles strictly, as will be seen from the next chapter. Not only did he follow the principles, but he also got approval from his old uncle, who was experienced in political affairs. And that was also confirmed by Lord Krishna, the speaker of the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita. Maharaj Yudhisthira is the ideal monarch. And monarchy under a trained king like Maharaj Yudhisthira is by far the most superior form of government, superior to modern republics or governments of the people by the people. The mass of people, especially in this age of Kali, are all born Sudras, basically low-born, ill-trained, unfortunate, and badly associated. They themselves do not know the highest perfectional aim of life. Therefore, votes cast by them actually have no value. And thus, persons elected by such irresponsible votes cannot be responsible representatives like Maharaj Yudhisthira. Thus in the Bhaktivedanta purports of 1st canto, 9th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Passing Away of Bhishmadev in the presence of Lord Shri Krishna. Om Agyanahanti Mirandasya Gyananjanaha Shalakaya Chakshur Milikamena Tasmai Sri Guru Venama Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Svapritanya Nurjave Svalanadutatam Tadatishva Parantika Namasreshta Manumapi Sachiputra Matra Swarupam Rupam Tasya Grajam Puru Purim Maturim Gohostavitim Radha Kunda Giriva Ramahoradi Gamaravasam Praptoyasa Patita Kripaya Sri Gurum Tam Nato Smi Pitra Chanamatora Javasu Devana Modita Chakara Rajandhamina Pitri Pasamaham Vibhu. After this, the great religious king Maharaj Yudhisthira executed the royal power in the kingdom strictly according to the codes and royal principles approved by his uncle and confirmed by Lord Shri Krishna. Prabhupada opens his commentary on this verse, the concluding verse of the teachings of the passing away of Bhishmadev, but you can say the teachings of Bhishmadev, with the statement that Maharaj Yudhisthira is not a mere tax collector. He has a higher purpose in his government. And we see at the conclusion, at the last paragraph, Srila Prabhupada is lashing out at modern government systems, democracy or even modern monarchy, or communism, or whatever system that modern contemporary society is under, because the leaders are not qualified. That's the main problem that Prabhupada has with any system of government, that the leaders are not qualified. Recently, we had the Prime Minister of New Zealand, Mr. John Key. One of the young kids in the year, we call new entrants, year one class, 5 years old. Okay. They're writing about their experience with the Prime Minister in the school. And the kid was just hearing Mr. John Key, Mr. John Key, is in the name of the Prime Minister in New Zealand, John Key. So the kid thought we were saying Mr. Donkey. And so he writes his about the visit of the Prime Minister. They were very happy to have Mr. Donkey in our school. We didn't put that on Facebook, but that went up on the wall in the classroom, Mr. Donkey. And he is a bit of a donkey in many ways, because he was asked many questions. The children asked questions, right? They were rehearsing their questions. Pretty exciting to have the Prime Minister of the country in the school. Not many kids can say they had the Prime Minister come to their school. We happen to be in his electorate. He's in our electorate. There's 35 schools in our electorate. And so his secretaries, they took a liking to the school, to the temple, to the school. We invited them to the school. And they thought, well, this is a really cool school. It's a state integrated school. So it's like a state school, but it's a state school with a special character, and it's fully funded by Mr. John Key. And so they thought it would be good for the Prime Minister to come to our school. They enjoyed their day so much that they thought they should invite their boss. He's got two secretaries in his local office. So we couldn't work out why. We never invited him. The Prime Minister came to our school. I asked them, I said, why did he come to our school? And I said, many schools, you go to get heaps more votes by going to other schools. Lots more kids and lots more profile and stuff. And they said he came to the school because we told him to come. But we do Mr. John Key's calendar, you know, and so wherever he's told to go, he goes. He has to do what they say. So they put him at our school. Anyway, when he came into the school hall, we had about 100 children, and maybe 10 or so teachers. There was a few more teachers on that day than usual, and a few more kids on that day than usual too. So he came in, and he's got these, you know, his entourage and his bodyguards and everything. And he comes in, and the kids have been rehearsing this line. Like, I was waiting outside the hall with one of his secretaries, and she heard, "Hare Krishna, Mr. John Key." And she said, "Oh, is he inside already? Did we miss something?" And I said, "No, no, they're just practicing to say their welcome to the Prime Minister. They want to get it down, you know, they've been practicing for 3 or 4 days." So when he walks into the hall, all the kids stand up. And in unison, gusto, they say, "Hare Krishna, Mr. John Key." Really loud and really powerful. "Hare Krishna, welcome." And then he was walking in, right? And he got kind of a bit of a shock, you know. And it was a loud Hare Krishna. And he goes, "Oh, Hare Krishna, children." Kind of didn't, you know, it was just spontaneous. It's like, "We're going to get you to chant, Mr. John Key." And then he was like, he was a bit stiff. He was a bit, he wasn't as comfortable as he usually is. But the kids did a very beautiful kirtan. And we have a strong tradition in our school of kirtan. We teach mridanga according to traditional beats, and we teach harmonium with a traditional Bengali music teacher. So the kirtans, even from 6 years old, the kirtan's very good standard in our school. And they did a very ecstatic kirtan the year 2 and 3 class, so 6 and 7 year old kids, they led the kirtan for the Prime Minister, and they were very ecstatic, and very loud, you know, and melodious kirtan. And these kids, the year 2 and 3 class, they had a tendency, because every Monday we have school assembly, and so one class leads the assembly, and they present like this. So they're the class, they're famous for going on and on and on, you know, they do Jaya Gonitai, Jaya Radha Govardhanadhari, Jaya Radha Giridhari, Jaya Jagannath, Jai Giriraj, they'll do Jai for everyone, right? Jai Radha Shamsunda, Jai Radha Madhava, they just keep Jaiing. And then Jai Prabhupada, and Jai Gurudev, and Jai, Jai, Jai. They just do that. 3 million Jains. So I was thinking, oh, this is going to go on forever, this kid, year 2 and 3 class. But the teacher had got him down, you know. And they were going Jai, and she just stopped the kirtan. And then he was introduced, and he spoke. And the kids had their rehearsed questions to ask him. You know, the Prime Minister kind of wanted to ask some cool questions. And they did ask some pretty profound questions. And then he answered like somebody had just quickly written the script and sent it to him, you know. And it was just like completely, you know, mechanical response. Everything was mechanical. It was like nothing from his heart. It was all straight off the top of his head. And he's fast and he's sharp. He's, you know, he's the number one guy in the country. He's a sharp guy. He doesn't have to think, and he just responds. And so the acting principal there is Dwarika Krishna Nanda Prabhu. He's from the UK. And he was the one who was kind of hosting the Prime Minister. And so he was sitting up next to the Prime Minister. And he turned to him, he said, "Any more questions?" And so the acting principal, he says, "Yeah, I have a question for you." And he says, "You know, in our Vedic culture, we have a system that in terms of education, that values are an important part of the education of the children. And we're called a special character school. We're a special character school in New Zealand, and we not only follow the New Zealand curriculum, but we teach music and dance and drama, and we teach the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita." And he said, "In the Bhagavad Gita, our spiritual preceptors, they've taught us that the leaders of society should follow these values, and they should understand these values, and therefore they can impart the values to people." And I said, he's like giving this guy the source. And then he says, "So what's your opinion? What's your personal?" He said, "I'm asking personal. What's your personal opinion of values in education?" And so he just waffled on and on about the economy and stuff like that. It's like nothing to do with the question at all, you know. Just went on and on and on. "That was a good question, but the real question is this." And he gave the answer to his question. And it was like pathetic. But he had been asked a very pertinent question. It's related to today's verse. that the leaders of society, they're not mere tax collectors, but the leaders of society, they have a duty to perform. And their duty begins with an understanding, a realization that the human form of life is valuable. It's got some value. It's temporary, but it's got value, Prahlad Maharaj says. And the value of the human form of life is that we can begin from the very beginning, Dharmam Bhagavatam, Iha. From the beginning of life we can get Dharma. From the beginning we can give understanding of Dharma. Understanding of our constitutional position. That's the value of human form of life. That is the artha that the leaders have to know. And when they know, they can impart, they can support, they can facilitate, they can nurture, they can nourish that. Prabhupada says in this purport that the monarch, the king, he's like the father or spiritual master. He says he's got a duty as a king, which is no less than that of a father or a spiritual master. Can you imagine? The king or the queen of England, she's our Mataji, queen of England, or Prince Charles or Philip or whoever it is going to be. They have to have this understanding, this realization. And it's profound. In the Vedic scripture, it's a very profound reality. Lord Ramchandra, Yudhisthira Maharaj, Kurukshetra Maharaj, the Bhagavata Raja yesterday, we quoted that verse from the second canto of Bhagavatam, that they're Raja Rishis. A Raja Rishi is the king with the quality of a king, the Sodyam Tejo Dhritam Daksham, Ishvara Bhav. They've got the quality of the determination of a king and the quality of the expertise of a kshatriya and the quality of this steadfastness and control. That they know how to control people in a good way, in a way that's going to benefit the praja, the dependents. And dependents aren't only in the human form of life, the dependents are in all forms of life. So the king is responsible for the welfare of the plants and the trees and the animals and everybody in his kingdom is responsible for, to make sure that they can progress. So this is a great responsibility of a king to understand this knowledge. In the fourth chapter of the Gita, in the purport to Imam Bilasvate Yogam, verse 4.1, in that purport, Prabhupada says it's the responsibility of the leaders of society to understand the importance or the value of spiritual life, and that they should be able to impart that to the citizens through education, through culture, and through devotion. Three things. They should be capable, the leaders of society should be well versed in the Vedic literatures, and they should be able to impart this knowledge through education, through culture, and through devotion. This is like a train station, isn't it? You guys have got ants in the pants. In Mulambar, the first section, in Mulambar they have this really heavy ranch slider door. And it's the ball bearings went on it about 18 years ago. And it's really loud, right? And when they open the door, the whole wall, the whole temple shakes when they open the door. And they are and whole class is like, whoa, 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 whoa. But this is pretty good. Not too bad. So the leaders of society, they have to be able to impart this through education. But the education system is materialistic. We know that. The education system, in 2010 we received a new curriculum document from the Ministry of Education. And we were to implement that document by the end of 2010. And there was a lot of consultation and there was lots of to-ing and fro-ing and lots of questionnaires and surveys and, you know, it was a good document. Materially, it was a good document. One of the better curriculums in the world. and it had values in it, and it has special skills. They call them, in New Zealand we call them competencies, key competencies that kids will learn to participate and contribute and to relate to others. They'll learn how to think. But they'll do all these things for the wrong purpose. They're going to be taught all these things to enjoy to the maximum capacity. That's the goal of the materialistic education, is to come out so that you come out on top. Mm-hmm. And you come out at all expense. You come out on top and you've got the best capacity, the best facility to enjoy your senses. So it's materialistic. It's a materialistic education system. Prabhupada called it a slaughterhouse in the first canto of Bhagavatam, in this canto. Prabhupada in 1.1.22, he says it's a slaughterhouse. But education, modern day education, is a slaughterhouse, and you should be very cautious when you send off your children to the slaughterhouse, because they're going to come back without a soul. They're going to go in one way, they're going to go in with the soul and creativity and imagination and intelligence, and they're going to come out dull heads. I was in a high school recently. We've been going to a course on a Monday evening, myself and my wife, and we were sitting in different parts of this room, and there was the children. It was a year 10 classroom, maybe 15, 16 year old kids, and they had, it was an English classroom, and they had the lists on the wall. They had a bucket list. A bucket list means, what are the things you want to do before you die? Before you cark it, what are the things on the top of your list, right? And priority. 1 to 10. What's your bucket list? So they had these bucket lists. And number one on the bucket list was sex. I have sex. Right. Number two, you can probably guess the rest. Number two on the bucket list was to take drugs. Number three on the bucket list, sex, drugs, was to break the law. Number four was to say yes once. Now, there's a whole purport behind that statement, but some of you younger generation will understand what it means. To say yes once. It went over my head. Number five was to bring mum and dad back together. Number six was, so the list went down, right? That was their bucket list. And I said to my wife, well, you know, how was your bucket list? It wasn't part of our course, by the way. We were just looking around the classroom, because as being teachers, whenever you go into a school, you check things out. Particularly, you look for bucket lists. You know, it's like, it's a reflection of the kind of mentality of the students. You take a little bit of a litmus test of the kids. So she said, yeah, my bucket list was this, and she gave me her list, and, you know, the order was a bit different, but the same content. Covered all the same points. That's what materialistic education is. Materialistic education means you're going to get the maximum facility to do these things. You're going to come out with an A plus, with a really pretty girlfriend or a muscular, handsome boy, and access to lots of different forms of intoxication, and lots of recognition and fame, a lot of medals and things. And you might get entrance into a prestigious university, and there you'll continue to kill the soul. And that's why Prabhupada called it a slaughterhouse. Because a slaughterhouse education means you go in, everybody comes out the same. It's like a factory. You know, it's like a sausage processing machine. You put in the offal and all the remnants and all the crap from the whatever, and it comes out like all packaged and all the same. And it's easily packaged, and it's easily distributed, it's easily stacked, and it's easily sold in the supermarkets. That's a factory production education. We come out all with all the same goal. It's like 12 years of indoctrination. Brain, not brainwashing, but 12 years of indoctrination. That if you graduate from this institution, you're going to have a good potential to enjoy it. And of course, it's false. It's decreasing our potential to enjoy. Drastically decreasing it, because we're seeking happiness in the wrong place. But if we had leaders in society, or Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that teachers in modern day education systems are like Bakasura. So he compared them to Bakasura. Because Bakasura looks like a nice, not Bakasura, Vatsasura. Vatsasura looks like a nice calf, right? He's pretending to be a nice calf and a good friend of Krishna, and Krishna's dear to him. But he's a demon inside. He's a demon inside this beautiful form that we give attraction, we become attracted to. But he's a demon. Vatsasura is a demon. Calf demon. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that modern day educators, they're like Vatsasura because they're killing the spirit of their students. If they don't give Krishna, then they're killing their students. And that the students are attracted to them, that the teacher is naturally guru. The teacher is somebody who's got something to impart, some spiritual essence to impart. And if we don't give that, then we're violent. That's Prabhupada's definition of violence, is to interfere with the natural progression of a living entity. And Bhagavad Gita Prabhupada gives this very interesting definition of hinsa, to interfere with the natural progression of a living entity, to stop their progress. Every living entity, when they come from the material world, has a potential to evolve, to transform, to become better than we are. We all have that capacity. And if we don't give Krishna to others, if we don't distribute Prabhupada's teachings to the conditioned souls, then we're considered to be violent. We're acting in a violent way. And so leaders in society and teachers who don't give spiritual instruction to their dependents are violent. They're committing acts of violence. And this is against the teaching of the scripture, against the teaching of Bhishmadev, Pitamaha. Against his teachings. Look, Bhishmadev's teachings have been summarized in this purport by Prabhupada. He says the first one is not to become angry. Sometimes we become angry, isn't it? When we don't get our own way, we become angry. Or, you know, when somebody pulls in front of us or something in the car, we get angry. When the bus goes or the tram doesn't come, or whatever it is, we get angry. So the first teaching of Bhishmadev is not to become angry. Easier said than done. Right? But we can do it. This is a krodha-vegam. It's a pushing of the consciousnesses to become conditioned souls, to become angry. And we can overcome that pushing, that urge to respond in a negative way, to respond in a detrimental way, by cultivating by cultivating simplicity, then we can overcome this urge to become angry, that we become self-satisfied. If we're satisfied within ourselves, then we've got less tendency for others to push the buttons to become angry. Not to lie or to tell the truth. Truthfulness is a quality that Bhishmadeva was teaching, the importance of satyam. To equally distribute wealth. In the Bhagavatam, it says that in the second canto, it gives a very inspirational kind of encouragement to give. It's a dharma of the, particularly of the grihasthas and kshatriyas and vaishyas, to give wealth. Of course, the brahmacharis and the sannyasis are also giving, but the dharma of the grihastha ashram is to make sure that everybody is supported in society, to give. And in one purport, Prabhupada says that if you give to a half-educated brahmana, you'll get the same back what you gave. If you give $10, you'll get $10 back somehow. Maybe not directly, but you'll get $10 back. If you give to a half-educated brahmana, if you give to an educated brahmana, you'll get back 100-fold. There's a Sanskrit verse for this. You get back 100-fold. And then if you give to a highly educated brahmana, then you'll get back 1,000-fold. And if you give to a Veda Paraka, one who understands the
essence of the Vedas is a bhakta, a devotee, then you'll get back, Prabhupada says, in unlimited reciprocation, unlimited, more than 1,000, much more than 1,000, if you give. So, giving is really important, to distribute wealth is important. Otherwise we become a kripana, we hold on to our wealth. One time when you were a devotee who had a lot of cash, and he doesn't want to put it in the bank, he doesn't want to, you know, declare it to the government, and so he dug a hole in the ground, a big hole, because he had a lot of cash. So he dug a hole in the ground, and he covered it over, and then grass grew there, and trees grew, and natural forest in Australia grew quickly after a bushfire or something. And then he had so much wealth there, and he forgot where it was. Couldn't remember where he put all of his money. Now he's moved away. There's a lot of money somewhere in Victoria. He's a creeper now. If you equally distribute the wealth, you get more back. If you hold on to it, you get nothing. To forgive, Vishwamitra is teaching forgiveness. Now that's a bit harder. And in Bhagavatam, we've seen so many amazing examples of forgiveness. Draupadi is a classic example of forgiveness in relation to this Mahabharata pastime. Classic. And what to speak of just the interaction between Yudhisthira and Dhritarashtra and Gandhari and Kunti. There's an amazing culture here of forgiveness. But they're able to speak. Bhima's speaking in a very coherent way with Gandhari and Dhritarashtra. Bhima, who drank, wants to drink the blood of their son, Dushasana. And he's able to speak to his auntie and say, look, you know, he was dutifully, he could have been killed many times. He explained that Duryodhana and Dushasana, you, all of your sons, they could have been killed many, many times over, but they haven't been killed. So that forgiveness is really important. And it's not something that we can demand from people. We can hope for it, but it's not something we can demand. And it's a really important part of transformation that we forgive. We learn how to forgive. Because if we don't forgive, we hold on to this this vengeance for our life. And it becomes a big obstacle in our progress in Krishna consciousness, if we don't forgive, if we don't learn to forgive. To beget children only by one's legitimate wife, so that rules out our bucket list. To beget children only by one's legitimate wife, isn't it? This is dharma. You have a legitimate wife. And Prabhupada says, outside of marriage, dharma yudhu kamo smi. Krishna says, not Prabhupada. That if you engage in for propagating children, sex life is available. Sex life is a fact of life. Otherwise, it's restricted. It's part of our restrictions. It's part of our, yesterday we talked about tapasya. It's part of that tapasya, or vairagya. Mahaprabhu bhakta gane vairagya pradhan yaha deke priti gaura bhagavan. That Mahaprabhu, he becomes very happy when we restrict ourselves. Sometimes he said, alright, it's not an anger of bhakti to be a tapasvi, but to restrict ourselves pleases Lord Chaitanya. So if we can get the blessings of Lord Chaitanya, if we can get Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy, we will be successful at the ultimate end. So restriction is very, really important. To be pure in mind and hygienic in body. We have a value song. Our kids sung our value song for John Key. That was like the grand finale. That was it. If he wasn't impressed before that, he left with a tear in his eye. We have this value song. And it's based on an acrostic poem. You know what an acrostic poem is? Probably. Who knows what an acrostic poem is?
Yeah. it mentions that the syllable of the value matches of whatever you specify on every sentence of the poem.
Good. Then you have K R I S H N A. And so the first line starts with K in our song. It's a values song. So it's kindness. It's kindness, compassion, and caring. It sounds like a K. Okay, kindness, compassion, and caring. Krishna consciousness to all we are sharing. It's a song. R is for respect and responsibility. Ramachandra Bhagavan, accountability. And then I is for integrity, true to our word. I is for integrity, true to our word. Forget the rest of the song. I wrote it, but it was a long time ago. S for service and self-control. And H is for hygiene, happiness. Hygiene, health, and happiness. And N is for nurture and nourishing the soul. And A is for achievement. Assessment. Aim high. You want our kids to be good. We want the bar up high. So that's our values song. And we have a really cool musician in our school from Philippines. And so she put it to a very beautiful melody. And she came in and sung it for John Key. And it finishes up with la-de-la-de, la-de-la-de, sham. And then they get into a very big ecstasy over the Radhe Sham part of it. But it's a values song. So hygiene and hygiene is a value for devotees. Prabhupada taught us to live hygienically, taught us how to clean, particularly taught us how to clean our body, how to clean our environment, how to clean our mind, how to clean our brain, and how to clean the heart. Sarvatma snapanam vijayate Shri Krishna Sankirtana. Sankirtan cleanses the heart. All the atmas are cleansed. Savatma. The mind atma, intelligence atma, the heart atma, the body atma. All the atmas are cleansed by Sankirtan Yajna. I'm going to tie all this in with the incorporation of ISKCON 1966, because Mahatmaji is going to ask me. Yesterday he asked me, Lokanath, and I was thinking, Lokanath Maharaj just passed away. I was like, whoa, what happened? I got a bit shocked. But Achintya Rupa Mahatmaji came to our rescue. She told this amazing pastime of Vinod, Radha Vinod. So I will mention this. I think Mahatma must have this reminder on his calendar, calendar reminder when he logs in the morning, an alarm goes off and says, Lokanath Goswami's disappearance, incorporation of ISKCON. I used to have this, but I got a new laptop, so I wasn't up to the play. And yet, the next one is not to be inimical toward anyone. Maipada karuna evacha. This is a quality of the devotee. Prabhupada says, Krishna says in the 12th chapter in the Gita that we should be friends with everyone, maitra kuru nevacha, and show compassion to all living entities. And you know what goes around, comes around. What you give out comes back to you. We just came from a conference. We had a conference at New Govardhan. It was a really nice conference. So we called it Education Mela. You know, like Kuli Mela and Kirtan Mela. So we thought, why these guys can have Mela, we can have Mela too. So we had Education Mela, not conference. It wasn't a conference. We didn't have many people in that Mela, but it was a Mela. I don't know how many people you need to qualify to be called a Mela. But we still called it a Mela. Anyway, in the Mela, we had one presentation by a devotee, and his presentation is called Nurturing the Heart. It's an approach for getting through to some kids who are difficult to get to. You know, some kids, they don't respond to just the normal stuff. Like, you might have some nice rules and regulations, or you might have just some eye contact, or you might put your hand on their back and pat them, or some method that you get to connect with a kid. But some kids just never, they don't connect. They don't want to connect that way. They want to keep crawling up the walls and doing stuff, and double flip somersaults and stuff like that. So to connect with those kids who are flipping out, then he presented this thing called nurtured heart approach. And nurtured heart means that you cultivate the inner wealth of the child, but the child has a negative sense of their identity. Like we, as materialists, we have a negative sense of our identity as conditioned souls. We think our identity is material. That's negative. That's like a big, that's really a big kind of downer. To identify with the body is a negative thing. So it can't be happy in that way. So in the nurtured heart approach, you try to find the kid doing something good. And some people, some parents or some teachers say that this kid never does anything good. This kid's always doing the wrong thing. And they say, no, you have to find, just be patient. Pray to Krishna that you'll see them do the right thing. And so they told the story of Shamu. Shamu is a big, huge whale. And this Shamu is in like a big water park or something like that up on the Gold Coast or wherever they have water parks. And this whale jumps out of the ocean and through a huge hoop and across a big line, like that is like 30 meters out of water. Enormous whale, you know. I don't know how many hundreds or thousands of kilograms. And this whale learned how to do that, to jump through the hoop or to jump over the bar. Shamu, he learned by when he was a baby whale, like maybe not this big, but when he was a baby whale, he had his trainer put the string or the rope, he put the rope on the bottom of the pool. And the whale would just swim across the bottom of the pool. It wasn't very difficult. And it would get over the rope. And so when he got to the end, he got a fish. And then when he swam back the other way and got over the rope, which was on the bottom of the pool, he got another fish. And he thought, well, this is a good deal. You know, it's like Pavlov's dog, this kind of Pavlov's whale. He was getting a response. Good. That's what he wanted. He wanted a fish. So when he lifts the rope, he's got to get over the rope. He understood he's got to get over the rope to get the fish. And so they just kept lifting the rope. And the whale kept getting over the rope and getting fish, getting well fed. And then finally, after so many months of this training, the whale can jump through hoops and gets lots of people to come and watch him do it. And that's how Shamu became a famous hoop jumper. He started off down the bottom of the pool and ended up out of the pool. So this is an approach. This is an approach that Jai Shiva was presenting up in Mwilambar, called nurtured heart approach, nurturing the heart of these difficult kids to get to, and trying to cultivate or to develop an inner sense of achievement for them. He called it inner sense of wealth. That they have at the moment, they have this portfolio of themselves as a failure. They have this. They've got a portfolio that I'm no good. And I only get attention when I mess up. It's a negative sense of who you are. And so this nurtured heart approach tries to catch kids doing the right thing. And we might have to put the rope right on the bottom and just catch them putting their bag on the hook without beating the kid next to them up. And you say, right, I really appreciate how you didn't smash up Haridas. That was really cool, you know, that you didn't beat him up. And so you start pretty low and then you up it. And it gets, and the kids start to develop this positive sense of their identity. So that was to not be inimical toward anyone, but covering Vishnudeva's summary of his teachings. To be simple. And I said I was going to tie these teachings in with Srila Prabhupada's incorporation deed. In 1966, and we know that Prabhupada, he didn't coin this phrase, simple living and high thinking, but he definitely used the phrase, simple living and high thinking. It was a common phrase of the day, but Prabhupada really wanted to embrace that philosophy of simple living and high thinking. And not simple thinking and high living, but he wanted us to adopt this system, that we would be self-satisfied, and peaceful. And that was one of his goals, or that was one of his targets for incorporating the society. And to support servants or subordinates. That's the final teaching of Grandfather Bishnadev. Not the final teaching, but within these nine categories, he's presented to Yudhisthira and the Pandavas and to all of the great assembled sages and rishis and spiritual masters. He's presented this Niti Shastra. He's presented this codes of ethics and how to live a good, clean life and to become a devotee. The very first thing Bhishmadev teaches, and that comes out of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and many people reading Mahabharata might not get this, but the very first thing Bhishmadev speaks on his bed of arrows is a glorification of Krishna and Krishna's position. And he speaks to Yudhisthira, I think, or he says that you didn't always know that Krishna, who's your friend, and Krishna, who's your charioteer, and Krishna, who's your family member, you didn't always realize who he was, that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That was the first thing. So Bhishmadeva establishes Ishvara Parama Krishna, that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the cause of all causes. And then he went on to this explanation, to this description of controlling anger and living simply, etc., etc. So how do we connect this Vishnadeva's teachings with Srila Prabhupada's his seven purposes of Islam? We were in the Kagar temple. In Kagar they have this is Navi Mumbai. They have they're building a very wonderful temple there, bigger than Juhu Beach temple. That's going to be a big temple. Right? Much bigger land than Juhu and a bigger construction than Juhu. So, the same devotee who was in Juhu has gone moved there, and most of the same personalities are behind it. But anyway, on his wall in his office, this Suradas, on his wall in his office, he has a very beautiful plaque of the seven purposes of ISKCON. And I noticed it was in Juhu, and I noticed it was in a lot of the temples around there. They had someone do a nice Photoshop number on the seven purposes of ISKCON. And that's the guiding vision for their project. That if their project satisfies these seven purposes, then it's going to be pleasing to Prabhupada and it's going to be success. That's the success criteria. It's the benchmark. That right? Yes, this project is enabling us to fulfill Srila Prabhupada's mission. And the first one is about education. A lot of them are about education. But the first one is to systematically propagate this spiritual knowledge to the society at large. I remember in some years ago we went to a conference in Abenthal, Germany, and many devotees were invited to this conference. And Hari Kesha Prabhu, he was the convener of the conference. He called people from all around the world. And so we went to this conference, and it was facilitated by an academic. One of the devotees' fathers was a professor, and he did a lot of work for his son. And so he was facilitating. He doesn't know the status of all these different swamis that were there, right? Hridayananda Maharaj, and I think Timokrishna Maharaj, and Hridayananda, all these big sannyasis that were there. He doesn't know who they are from above. So he's just talking to them like he's talking to anybody, right? Putting them in their place. And so he asked the group, there's about 35, 40 people, he asked the group, who's this for? We're working on our principles of education and doing this kind of work, you know, mission and stuff. And he said, well, who's it for? And Hari Kesha Prabhu says, it's for everybody, for the whole world. And like this guy is like an academic and he's got to hone things in. It's got to be for a specific audience, but this can't be so vague. It's for everybody. And he goes, all right, so it's for every old person, every baby, every generation, every nation. And Hari Kesha's going, yeah, what's your problem? That's what it's for. And in a sense, he's right, but it's not practical when you're getting it down to educational, you know. You've got to have an audience for a particular education system. But his Prabhupada was for everybody. That's what he's meaning. That Prabhupada's system is to systematically present spiritual knowledge for the benefit of society at large. That's Prabhupada's word. He said it's for the benefit of society at large. And then to educate them in the techniques of spiritual life. To educate them in the techniques of spiritual life in order to correct the imbalance of values in life. To teach them about the techniques of spiritual life, avidya, in order to correct the imbalance of values, of prayojana, in life. And by doing this, Prabhupada is hoping that we will bring about peace and unity, real peace and unity in society. That was the first purpose of ISKCON, the first statement that Prabhupada made, that he had signed as an incorporation deed in 1966, on this day in 1966. In New York, to everybody who signed, nobody who signed that document was a devotee, was an initiated devotee. Everybody was uninitiated at that time. And we know that Mukunda Maharaj, Michael Grant, was one of those signatures on that. And they had to have three signatures for that year, three for the next year, and three for the following year. So Don and Raphael and all these guys, they all got their signatures on this thing. But they were just trying to help out the Swami with his vision, with his mission. But this is a very, very incredibly profound mission of Prabhupada. It wasn't something that he just whipped up that night. And Mr. Goldsmith came in and he said, let's push this through. It's something that Prabhupada had meditated on for a long time. It was practically the League of Devotees document, but even before that, Prabhupada has been meditating on this international society. They have this theory in organizational development that you start, it's backwards learning, you start with the end in mind, so you get where you want to get to and then you work backwards, come to where you are now. So Prabhupada definitely had temples and schools and farming communities, he could see that, but it wasn't fully manifest at that time. And then the second one, maybe not in the order, but the second one on this list in Suridasa's office, and you can get it anyway. I tried to look here in the Prabhupada Lilamrita, but it's the only volume that's not in the bookcase. But the second one is about teaching Krishna, teaching the position of Krishna according to Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. It's a very big push of Srila Prabhupada's. And we can see how Grandfather Bhishmadeva's introduction was about that Krishna is the supreme. If we start with Janmadya Sayataha from the very beginning, then things are in the right perspective. That Krishna is God. Not just God, he's supreme God. That's a good start. So we want to teach that. Bhishmadeva is teaching that. Everybody in the Bhagavatam is teaching that particular philosophy. Then Prabhupada says he wants to bring the devotees in the society nearer, closer together and nearer to Krishna. He wants to bring us close together and nearer to Krishna. And there he says, in that particular one, he says, nearer to Krishna and to help them to understand, to facilitate their understanding that they're a part and parcel of Krishna. It's interesting that Prabhupada, his famous part and parcel statement, his famous part and parcel tagline, is in the mission statement. It's in our vision that we're part and parcel of Krishna. We can only really learn our part and parcelness by being in association with devotees, by being close to the devotees and near to Krishna. And then we can understand that we are qualitatively, he says, of the quality of Krishna. That we are qualitatively part and parcel of Krishna. And then he wants to preach that the fourth one, perhaps not in order, but a fourth statement, is that he wants to propagate this teaching of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Sankirtan Yagya of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, for this Kali Yuga, because there's no other process practically. Kali Dosha Nidheya. In Kali Yuga, it's difficult. Maximum amount of obstacles in Kali Yuga, but if we can teach Kirtanat, Eva Krishna, say, the Kirtan of Krishna, then Mukta Sangha Parambhavaj, we can become liberated. So he wants to focus that. That's right there nested in the seven instructions or mission statement of Prabhupada. And then, I don't know what we're up to, five, he says that he wants to again bring the devotees closer together. Twice he makes this statement. He wants to bring the devotees close together. Satam prasangam mama vidya sambhido. We do hearing and chanting together. We do worshipping together. We serve together. And when we do it together in this sangha, prasanga, then we become enlightened and we become inspired and we become convinced about what we're doing. Because there's a lot of other people doing what we're doing, like-minded people doing what we do together best. So bring them together. And this time it was for one of Bhishma Dev's instructions here, was to understand or appreciate and value simplicity, a more simple and a natural way of life. To bring the members of the society together to experience, to live a more simple and a natural way of life. And then he wanted to erect a temple for the devotees and for society at large, he says. To erect a temple for the devotees and for society at large that will be a focus point for the pastimes of Krishna. Recently we opened a temple in Chennai. I don't know if anybody was at that opening, but we had Banaswami in our temple about 3 or 4 days before that opening. And as you know, Banaswami is from that temple. He's been in Chennai for many, many years. And he presented to us a slideshow of how that all came about, their temple in Chennai. It's a very fascinating presentation. And it's built according to Vastu Shastra. And it's built according to many, many, all Vedic principles. And so, you know, in Vastu, you have different directions. There are different, in the Shastra, different demigods who are controlling different directions of the house in the northeast. And in the southwest, we have different demigods, Vayu, and different personalities who are influencing the house and the house members. So in the Gaudiya Vastu Shastra, there are different incarnations who rule the west and the east and the north and the south. And so in the temple in Chennai, they did these very beautiful stained glass windows, very unique for an Indian temple. And for the directions, they have stained glass avatars. They have the Das avatar protecting the directions. And they have different levels in the temple. So right from the ground level, they have this amazing chakra in the middle of the temple, and it's lit up from underneath. It's a translucent, precious stone, and embedded in the stone is a particular yantra. I think it's a Sri Yantra embedded in the stone. And it lights up. In the night time, it lights up. It's very amazing. And the whole temple comes from that mantra. It builds up from that particular place. And then on different levels, there are different personalities going up. There's staircases that go up, and you go up the staircases, and there are different personalities, and they correspond to the chakras. So in this way, he's got opened an amazing temple that's a manifestation of Vastu Shastra, and that is a completely pure, purely Vaishnava, Gaudiya Vaishnava. Lord Chaitanya is very prominent in this temple and the Sankirtan Yajna at all different levels. So that's it. And the last one is of Prabhupada's mission statement is to, in order to achieve the aforementioned, those previous mentioned activities of developing farming communities and schools and temples and that sangha, in order to facilitate that would be the publication and the distribution of transcendental literatures to support that. So I thought on this anniversary of the inauguration of that document of the seven purposes of ISKCON, It would be nice to use that as our kind of a framework or a benchmark, and to connect that with these nine teachings, these nine purposes, nine qualifications given by Bhishmadeva for human society. Not to become angry, not to lie, to equally distribute wealth, to forgive, to beget children only in one's legitimate wife, to be pure in mind and hygienic in body, not to be inimical toward anyone, to be simple, and to support servants and subordinates. And we can see that if Prabhupada's mission, and it is successful, and it is developing, and it is progressing, Prabhupada's mission is progressing, and we are achieving many, many goals that Prabhupada had envisioned, because we're following this prescription of Grandfather Bhishma. We're following the direction and the guidance of the personalities of the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Any questions or comments? Prabhu?
Yeah, just going on that single living and high thinking theme and what the achievements of this kind of stuff, one of them that seems to be lagging behind is the farm community and struggling to get people to actually take that on and live simply and be on the farms and do that. Is there any sort of answer to this? Or
One response that we've been churning a little bit, I've been in New Zealand for the last 12 years. And we have some devotees who are living simply, without electricity, in a cold climate, and washing their clothes and working like this in Keti Keti. And one thing we thought of, or those devotees have discussed this many times, is that there are not many farmers in ISKCON. We preach a lot in urban centres, urban yoga. We preach a lot in the cities. And not many city folk know how to grow a pumpkin, or even know how to cook one, not to speak of grow one. And that's not Varnashram. I know growing pumpkins isn't Varnashram, but it's a start to a simple, more natural way of life, is to grow a veggie patch. So we thought Sri Vikram Prabhu is one of our very stalwart devotees in the rural district in New Zealand. He's got a plan to preach to the farmers, make farmers devotees, and they'll naturally support our society in doing things that they know how to do, because farming is something that's passed on through generations. You grow up on the land, you know the land, it's second nature to you. And we know there are certain devotees that know the land, that do incredible things. There's a devotee up in Mwulumba who's, before he became a devotee, he had a market garden. And so he's an amazing gardener. That they'll give him all the woofers because he knows what to do with them. If he gave me 40 woofers in the garden, it'd be a waste of time. Because I don't know much about gardening and composting and stuff like that, but he's from generations of market gardeners. So he's using them very well. He's rare though. Even in our farming communities around the world, we don't have many farmers. And so the devotees, they're living on a farm and they're working, 50, 100 kilometres away. They're driving to work every day and come back to the farm. So that can't, it doesn't really work.
Yeah, well, I think the farms, initially you want them to have like a village, a self-sustainable village. That doesn't seem to have worked in hundreds of gotten any of it. Another question also that comes up when we're talking about education and how being that only devotees understand this and want to put this into place, how are we going to get anybody in the education system outside in the wider area to understand what they're going to do?
Question.
Because it's been like all these years since Prabhupada's put it out, but it doesn't seem to have made any much difference to those schools there. Outside of our own schools, but I mean, the other schools there, and the politicians and things, they still haven't sort of taken this on board.
it's something that's very difficult to to really perceive the influence that Prabhupada and the philosophy and the devotees have in many areas, and one of them is in the area of governance and the area of you know, organized sort of systems and stuff like that. And education is one of those particular areas. But you can see that we have had an influence, and we're having more of an influence, just a presence. A presence is an influence, you can say. In London, we have a big presence. The Queen of London, the Queen of England, Queen of London, she went to our school, the Krishnavanti school, and she spent time there. And that school won prizes, awards for the most eco-friendly building in Europe, and it won different awards and things like that. Our school in New Zealand is a recognised state integrated school, and so we have state funding, and we have a charter, an agreement with the ministry, and if we don't teach Krishna consciousness, they can close us down. So we have an influence. If we don't have a certain amount, if we're not teaching Bhagavad Gita and harmonium and mridanga, then they'll say, what's the use of supporting this school? Kids can just go to the local school, go to Riverhead School. So we have to make sure that we're teaching a level of Krishna consciousness. They make sure for us. Every 3 years they send a review team in to make sure we're teaching Bhagavad Gita. So we're having some influence. It's small, but it's a start. We're gradually getting there. And the Willenbar also, they've had a school for the same amount of time we've had a school.
The other question you have is politicians here. That you mentioned there that they need to be educated to rule the country properly and things like this, and you pointed out that they're not educated, so they're not doing that. So it almost seems like you need a devotee to run for a politician to get in there, to actually put someone in there that might be educated enough to do that. Is that?
When John Key left our farm, he left with a Bhagavad Gita. So maybe it will have some effect. He left with a Bhagavad Gita and a cookbook. Apparently he likes cooking, so he cooks every Sunday meal at home or something like that. So he took a cookbook and he took Bhagavad Gita, and he said he would definitely put it in his library. I don't know if he's going to read it, but it's going to go in his library. And that would be beneficial for him, that it goes in his library. We have a devotee who's about to run for, maybe running for a parliament next election in New Zealand for New Lin, for one of our big seats for the National Party, for John Keyes. So yeah, there's some devotees in parliament could be a good influence, but devotees have a big influence anyway, just by doing what we do, distributing prasadam. It's influential. Harinam, you don't know who's watching you on Harinam. Some of these, you know, stretch limos that go past, you don't know who's in there because they're tinted glass. We were doing Harinam in Queen Street one night, and a big stretch kind of fancy car pulled up, and they went down the window, and it was the leader of one of the big parties, a politician in New Zealand. He went down the window to check out what we're doing. Not having a whole meeting in the car, you know, it's like a big conference call going on. He went down the window. That was so you don't know who sees us and what, you know, how we come in contact with people, particularly through prasadam distribution. And we were talking, Amrita Prabhu, we were talking about the influence in those countries that have had massive prasadam distribution programs over many years, how that affects people. And you don't know where they go to. They come in as a tourist, a traveller, and they go back to their country, and you know, they might be working for a council in Poland in 10 years' time, and the devotees come to get an application through, and the devotee gives them the application because they had prasadam at Crossroads 10 years ago in Melbourne. We don't know all the amazing connections that are being made by devotees just doing what they do best, chanting Hare Krishna and serving prasadam. Anybody else?
I was just wondering how much for Prabhupada, how much of my energy.
You always bring up personalities with multiple names, and I'm trying to work out who's this Ambarish Maharaj or Ambarish Babu or Ambarish in Auckland. Yeah, definitely. He's blessed. You also can be blessed, Mahatma. Give everything to Lord Chaitanya. You get back unlimited. True. Grantharad Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Shri Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Bhakti Vinayana ki jai.